The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, welcome to The Trumpet Daily. I'm Brent Nuchtigall, your host for today's program, filling in for Mr. Stephen Fleury. I'm actually recording this late Sunday night here in South Dakota. I'm here with my family celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot as it's known in Hebrew. I'm typically working out of our office in Israel, in Jerusalem. I've lived there with my family for a number of years. But we traveled out of Israel, as lots of people are traveling in to celebrate the fall holy days. We traveled out to spend some time with my wife's family here in South Dakota with about 300 others, and we've just had a wonderful time. We've got a couple of days left before we begin our journey back to Israel. Now, typically, as I said, I do speak from Jerusalem. We have another program on the Trumpet and on KPCG called Watch Jerusalem, where we focus mainly on biblical archaeology and also prophetically significant news from the Middle East. And I'm going to put the archaeology to the side today for today's program and focus mainly on the Middle East and some unreported stories that you wouldn't have seen, which really does show the Biden administration going after Israel, going after its the typical allies of the United States, and seeking to empower Iran and radical Islamic elements throughout the Middle East. Now, this has everything to do with biblical prophecy. And you know that if you're a longtime listener to this program, or even a longtime reader of thetrumpet.com, The Trumpet Magazine, we keep our eye on biblical prophecies related to the Middle East, particularly related to Israel and also Iran's rise. And Mr. Gerald Fleury has been focusing on this for about 30 years because Iran's rise is very significant prophetically. It gives us a time frame and it shows us how close we are to the Great Tribulation, end time events, and to the fulfillment of the Feast of Tabernacles as well, as we'll get to today. And so focusing on Middle East events is critical, even though it might seem far off from your day-to-day activities, obviously, or the day-to-day news that you see or that you might see here in the United States or elsewhere around the world. There is a need to focus on what the United States is doing to its relationships in the Middle East, because out of this relationship is going to come an empowered radical Islam that is going to push the world towards the final culminating war. And I'm going to talk about a number of these stories, not just related to Iran and not even related to Afghanistan. Of course, that's the elephant in the room. It's very obvious what the United States has done there, empowering a radical Islamist state there led by the Taliban, handing over billions of dollars of weaponry. That's the obvious one. But we see in a number of other stories the United States pushing for radical Islamist elements to take over nations surrounding the state of Israel. And this, again, is by plan. This is by design. As hard as it is to say that, the Biden administration, the Obama administration before it, its policy is to isolate Israel and strengthen the elements that seek Israel's destruction. And there is a really sinister motive behind that. And Mr. Gerald Fleury's book, America Under Attack, and also Great Again, which are both available for you at thetrumpet.com. Both of them go into the spiritual dimensions behind why America would have such an erratic, it seems, foreign policy. A foreign policy that seeks to empower allies, empower the enemies, typical enemies of the United States. It is America under attack. That's what we're seeing with this administration. But also we're seeing Israel under attack as well. The state of Israel, a highly unreported element to the foreign policy of this administration of the United States. Before we get to that, I just want to cover briefly a story about COVID in Israel. And before that, just mention, of course, the really important election taking place today, taking place on Sunday. In Germany, this is the first election in almost two decades that Angela Merkel is not herself a part of, and it looks like the CSU or the CDU, or at least the CDU, her party, is having the suffering the worst loss ever, not even going across 30% of the vote. Looks like they've got about 25% of the vote right now, and it's obviously still going to be decided over the next couple of months as to who gets in power there. But here is a Germany that is wondering what is going to be the future of NATO. Well, really, not even wondering anymore. They're making their decisions, and they see that the United States has actively deserted its allies in Afghanistan, including Germany, and its own people. And so there is no chance whatsoever that the United States is going to be standing with Germany. And so they're going to be seeking their own leadership. They're going to be looking to their own leaders to supply security in such a dangerous world and a changing world. And that leadership is not going to come out of somebody elected in this election. The Bible talks about how the strong man of Europe that is prophesied is going to come in by flatteries. Daniel chapter 11 talks about this, a type of the Antiochus Epiphanes of old. And he is going to come in, as it says there in Daniel chapter, I think it's 11 and verse 31, by flatteries. And so coming out of this election, there will probably be some maneuvering, obviously, to try and form a coalition that's going to be able to govern. But there is a strong man that is eventually going to rise to the surface, somebody that is not voted into power. But first, let's get to this COVID story. I'm sure there's going to be more commentary on this election over the next couple of days in this program. I want to talk about COVID because I live in Israel, which is like ground zero for vaccination nation, as it seems, with third jabs going around everywhere. Almost half the nation have had their third jab. This story is called Recovered COVID Patients Will Require Vaccine Dose to Receive Green Pass, and it's from Sunday here in the Times of Israel. This is what it says. The Health Ministry announced on Sunday that from October 3rd, when a number of new restrictions will be introduced, recovered COVID-19 patients will be required to get a single coronavirus vaccine dose in order to be eligible to receive a green pass. So this is the same as a green a passport or COVID passport. This is allowing you to enter restaurants, events, universities, educational institutions. If you don't get the double jab, you have to then go ahead or if you don't have a green passport, you have to go ahead and get a test every time you want to do such a thing, or every couple of days. Under the current Green Pass rules, entry to certain businesses and events is limited to those with proof of vaccination, recovery from COVID, or a negative test. The new rule means that some 1.2 million Israelis who have been diagnosed with the virus since the start of the pandemic, along with those who have had a positive serological test showing high antibodies, will need at least one vaccine shot to qualify for the Green Pass. And so for all those people that thought, I've had COVID, I've got the antibodies, I'm not going to have to get the vaccine. Well, in Israel, that's not enough. And the reason I'm bringing up Israel is because Israel is like the model nation for vaccination. This is a nation that is already into its third jab, its booster shot. The CEO of Pfizer came to Israel and said, well, we're going to need to do this every 6 months to a year from here on out, it seems. That's what they're saying. And Israel is just jumping on board with all of these vaccines continuously. And many are wondering where it ends. Now, a lot of governments have been telling their people around the world that we're trying to get to this 70% or 80% vaccination rate, and then we'll open up. Then you'll have your freedoms back. Then we won't have a green passport system. We won't need it. But look at Israel. They have that already. They had that after two shots. But that's not enough anymore. There's a booster shot now, and then there'll be the fourth shot after that. And they're doing the booster shot all the way down to 12 years of age. Absolutely shocking what's going on here. And it's also shocking just how on board the media is with these decisions. I mean, Israel is taking orders from the Pfizer CEO, it seems. I remember a couple of months ago, the Pfizer CEO, this is before they had the booster shot or the third shot, this Pfizer CEO comes into Israel and says, yeah, Pfizer's very successful at countering COVID, which it's not at all. And the evidence is in now. And so he says, we're going to need to have a booster shot. And the Israeli press just reports that and says that Pfizer CEO says we need it, so obviously we're going to need it. And nobody stops to think about a conflict of interest here regarding the fact that this man is making money of every time somebody has a COVID shot. They're all on board. They love it. It's just going to continue, it seems. And so if you're in a nation like Australia and you're hoping for a lockdown to end and just enough people have to get vaccinated, not the case, not in Israel at least. Even if you've had COVID, they're going to come hunting for you to take the vaccine as well. And it's a sad state in Israel, a state that you would expect, you know, there would be some reliance on God. I mean, the reliance on God for healing, not putting complete trust in the medical profession and an untested vaccine, not even a vaccine by normal standards at all. But that's the way that Israel has gone, unfortunately. What I want to do now is get to these other stories relating to what the United States is doing, what's happening underneath the noses of the Biden administration, and what is, in some cases, the Biden administration's actively pushing these changes. And to really get the significance of this, you need to understand clearly the hatred that exists amongst the policymakers in the Biden administration, goes all the way back to Barack Obama, and his hatred for Israel and for the state of Israel even. And of course, there'll be people that come on that talk about the arms deals that Obama did make with the state of Israel. But what else did he do? What else did we do? And obviously there's books been written about this as well relating to the Iran nuclear deal, which was just cover to empower the radical Islamist regime of Iran, the number one adversary of the state of Israel, and empower them so that they could wipe Israel off the map. And that was the purpose of the United States pushing of that deal. And these are a number of stories that we'll cover, one relating to Lebanon, another relating to Egypt, and then we're going to even talk about one that relates to Venezuela also, because that's when it's coming a little bit closer to home for Americans and others about Iran's influence in the Western Hemisphere. First, though, I just want to go to a prophecy over in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40, because it underpins the reason of why we watch radical Islam in the Middle East, led by Iran, and why we're watching the Biden administration do all it can to desert the allies that have constrained radical Islam for the past 3 or 4 decades. Daniel 11 and verse 40, it says this, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships, and shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." Now, this is just a really important prophecy. It says it's at the time of the end. And if you keep on reading through the context here, you get to chapter 12. There's no chapter break meant to be there. And it rolls right into this time of trouble, which is called Jacob's trouble and elsewhere. A time of trouble for Israel, the modern state of Israel, and also the prophetic nations of Israel as well, including the United States. But there's characters that are mentioned here. You've got this king of the south, which Mr. Flurry, the editor-in-chief, chief of the Trumpet, has written for over 3 decades, is radical Islam led by Iran. And this radical Islamic power pushes the world towards this war that's going to end up engulfing every nation, and it's going to end up coming for the modern nations of Israel as well. And notice who he pushes at. He pushes at the king of the north, another power, which we've talked about and discussed and proved being a German-led Europe. And this is the initial battle that's going to push towards World War III. The king of the south, radical Islamic empire, that pushes at a German-led Europe. And so, to make this push possible, we have to see the empowerment of radical Islam. Now, the Obama administration, now in its third term, is not necessarily empowering radical Islam to make this push against Europe. It's clear that it's empowering radical Islam to attack America, to attack Britain even, and to attack the state of Israel. That's the desire, to go after Israel, to blot Israel out through this strategy. But that's not the way it's going to turn out in terms of this biblical prophecy. Nevertheless, it is, the Biden administration now is fully pushing for an empowered radical Islamic Middle East that will fulfill this prophecy. And so as we see radical Islam rise, and now with the support of the Biden administration, with the support of the United States, we can see how close this prophecy is to coming to pass, the prophecy that leads into the second coming of Jesus Christ to actually end all of this and fulfill the Feast of Tabernacles, as we'll get to a little bit later. This is just a smaller article. This article is entitled, Israel Won't Interfere with Hezbollah-Run Oil Shipments from Iran to Lebanon. So Lebanon, of course, is the state just above the state of Israel. Right now, it's in the worst financial catastrophe it's been in its history. And it is running short on supplies. There's massive power outages everywhere, food lines. It's a horrible situation for Lebanese. And typically, you've had Iran that's trying to weigh and strengthen its ally in Hezbollah. The Hezbollah we think of as a terrorist organization. They are that. They're also a political party inside Lebanon. And they hold the government of Lebanon to ransom, basically. And this article is interesting because it shows that Israel's current government is not interfering in the shipment of fuel to Lebanon. Dozens of trucks, this is the second paragraph here, dozens of trucks carrying Iranian diesel arrived in Lebanon on Thursday, the first in a series of deliveries organized by the Iran-backed Hezbollah terror group. And then later on it talks about this. For critics, however, the convoy is a symbol of the dissolution of the Lebanese state. So what we're seeing here is by Israel allowing these shipments in, they're actively strengthening Hezbollah. The Israeli government is. Now, why would the Israeli government do that? Netanyahu wouldn't have done that. Well, this Israeli government has its foreign policy in its chief foreign policy goal of not upsetting the United States. Government doing all it can to bend over backwards to inform the United States of everything it's going to do in the region, to make sure that it doesn't offend the United States. And what Israel's doing now through this government is basically handcuffing itself, or let's say tying its hands behind its back, because you've got the Biden administration that wants to strengthen the very nations that want to destroy Israel, and Israel wanting to not offend the United States. It sounds like a horrible policy, and it is, to the point now that this Israeli government, at fear of offending the Americans, because America wants Hezbollah to get these shipments in Lebanon, they're not acting. Now, here is another story. Experts weigh in on the Biden administration restricting aid to Egypt. Now, this is a very important story as well. Egypt, of course, is actually mentioned in this prophecy in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 41. And we might read that. It says this, Daniel 11 and verse 41, so we can tell where Egypt is going to fall prophetically. It says this, he shall enter into the glorious land. That is in response to radical Islam's push. The king of the north, a German-led Europe, is going to come down with its armies and even enter into the glorious land. That will be Israel, the area around Jerusalem. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the sons, children of Ammon, verse 42 actually. And he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt is not going to escape. So the land of Egypt is not going to escape the retaliatory strikes of the German-led Europe. So this implies that Egypt is actually going to ally itself with, as part of this king of the south, the Iranian or radical Islam led by Iran. Iran is that king, and we expect Egypt to fall to radical Islam based on this prophecy. And look what the Biden administration is doing. They are restricting military aid to Egypt. And they said they were probably going to do this already when they came into office. They actually started with the Saudis. They said to the Saudis, hey, cut back on what you're doing in Yemen against the Houthis. You're causing a humanitarian disaster. Instead of actually going after the Houthis in Yemen, who are an Iranian-backed group, of course, the United States decided to pull out of that war, not fund or not give weapons to the Saudis or the Emiratis to hold that back. And now they've even actually pulled out all the missile shield that is the Patriot system and such that defends Saudi Arabia from Iranian missiles. Did you hear about that? Biden administration's pulling it out. They're going to focus on Asia, they say. That's where the focus should be. Meanwhile, there's daily rocket and drone attacks by the Iranian-backed Houthis from Yemen into Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia can no longer rely on the United States. They know it. Most nations know that now. Saudi Arabia knows that. What about Egypt? This is from the Jerusalem Post, September 18th. It says this: the Biden administration will withhold $130 million worth of military aid to Egypt until Cairo takes specific steps related to human rights, a State Department spokesperson said. The U.S. has provided further on about $1.3 billion in foreign assistance to Egypt annually since 2017 fiscal year, according to a congressional research report. Sisi, who is the current leader of Egypt, who ousted the Muslim Brotherhood in 2013, remember that, led by Mohamed Morsi, has overseen a crackdown on dissent that has tightened in recent years. Rights groups say tens of thousands have been detained, including Brotherhood leaders and secular activists. So understand this if you can. Right now you've got the Biden administration saying to Egypt, we're restricting your military aid, you're not getting it, until you lift up on your human rights, until you stop cracking down on dissenters. Now, Egypt does crack down on dissenters. I'm not saying this is the right way to go about things. But in the Middle East, you have the choice of two evils. You either have a strong man who holds radical Islam at bay, or you have democracy at work. And democracy at work means that there will be a groundswell of Islamist governments. At least in Egypt, that's the case. That's the case in Saudi Arabia as well. And so you have strong men that rule, that put down the radical elements in their societies, and the United States now is saying, stop doing that, or you're not going to get our military aid. Now just compare that to what happened in Afghanistan. The United States walked away from billions of dollars of high-tech military hardware and a lot of cash. We didn't even know how much cash they left there. But it was millions and millions of dollars. We know that at least it's probably into the billions. We'll see where it stops once all the ransom payments eventually made. But who is all that money and military equipment going to? A lover of human rights? Someone that champions women's rights? Or is it going to the hardened Islamists, the Taliban? So in one place, just to the east of Iran, you've got the Taliban coming to control of American weaponry. And they're just slaughtering people in the streets. A failure, complete failure in human rights. And then an ally of the United States, Egypt, who is cracking down on dissenters such as Muslim Brotherhood leaders to hold the Muslim Brotherhood at bay, the United States says, stop doing that. We're going to limit your aid. This is what Dan Kurtzer said. He served as the U.S. ambassador to Egypt and Israel. He told the Jerusalem Post this, quote, it's particularly important today to reassure our allies and friends of the constancy of our relationships. Why is it important today? Because nobody trusts the United States. No one. No one in the Middle East trusts the United States, at least those traditional allies, including the State of Israel, Saudi Arabia, and even Egypt. Continuing on in this article, it quotes David Schenker, who's a senior fellow at the Washington Institute think tank. He says this: the purpose, I think, in withholding money has been to try and encourage better behavior. But this conditionality doesn't work with Egypt. Why? Because Egypt views the Muslim Brotherhood as an existential issue, central to its national security and an internal matter, and it is willing to forgo U.S. assistance and continue its policies, meaning that the government of Egypt has no choice. You either have freedom of expression completely, and you're going to have a groundswell of support for the Islamists, who last time Mohamed Morsi, who was a Muslim Brotherhood, got into power, he was marching to Jerusalem. They're all chanting, it's on our way to Jerusalem. And you had the Obama administration showing up on the doorstep with hundreds of businessmen from the United States ready to empower a Muslim Brotherhood-led government. You had the Iranian leadership there in the country as well. They were buddy-buddy. And you have the same thing taking place right now. Watch for this. Watch for more pressure on the Sisi government from the Biden administration, because it is prophesied that the government in Egypt is going to side with radical Islam. And so we do forecast a return of the Muslim Brotherhood to Egypt. Now, obviously, there are some commentators that are going to look at this prophecy in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 41 through 43, if they do look at it. And they'll say that Egypt and Iran allying, that's impossible. One Sunni, one Shia. But they don't care about that. We've just seen that. We've seen that take place in Afghanistan. You have the Sunni elements that are from the Taliban right next door to Iran, and they have been at war with each other over the past, let's say, 20 years ago, but not this Taliban. I just wrote an article. I think it's saying about, it's in the latest Trumpet, anyway. And I wrote about all the different connections of the past 5 or 6 years where Iran has been actively supporting the Taliban to remove the United States from Afghanistan. They've been working together. Iranians have been training Taliban fighters. Iranian Quds Force fighters have been killed on the Taliban on the battlefield. Iranian weaponry is showing up on that battlefield as well. They work together. They're working together now. The Middle East is changing. It's not about Sunni or Shia anymore. It's about radical Islamist governments and those governments that are going to be led by strongmen. That eventually other prophecies in the Bible, in Psalm chapter 83 and elsewhere, talk about those governments, such as the Saudis, Emiratis, Gulf states, Jordan eventually, and actually Lebanon eventually, they're going to be allied with Europe. They're going to be allied with the King of the North, not the Islamist powers. And that's what it says here in Daniel chapter 11. And so this is a forecast that you need to remember. When you see Egypt fall, and it looks like the Biden's pressure might lead to that, know that it's going to fall to Islamist elements. Know that those elements are going to ally with Iran. And know that it's going to empower the biblically prophesied King of the South. I do want to talk about one more story here related to something that, again, these are all moves by the Biden administration to try and strengthen America's one-time enemies. And it puts the state of Israel right in the firing line. Here's one that puts the American homeland right in the firing line. This is from the Jerusalem Post, September 25th. It's actually a Reuters story that was published there. Under U.S. sanctions, Iran and Venezuela strike oil export deal. It says this: Venezuela has agreed to a key contract to swap its heavy oil for Iranian condensate that it can use to improve the quality of its tar-like crude. With the first cargoes due this week, five people close to the deal said. One of the people said the swap agreement is planned to last for 6 months in the first phase, but could be extended. And then it talks about the oil ministries weren't available for comment about this. It talks about how both nations are under United States sanctions right now. Then it says this further on. United States sanctions are often applied at the discretion of the administration in power. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's government seized Iranian fuel cargoes at sea bound for Venezuela for alleged sanction busting last year, but his successor, Joe Biden, has made no similar moves. And so while this might seem like an obscure story, it's about Iran and Venezuela working together closely, help each other out around U.S. sanctions. They both work with each other to try and improve. Venezuela needs help with its oil refineries. And Iran needs access to the markets, some markets around the world. And so they're working together, and they have been for about 10 years. But this is something that the Trump administration worked actively to stop. This was one of the main things that early on the Trump administration was working to stop. This was one of the main reasons at the very beginning of the Trump administration that the National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, was targeted by the Obama administration because he knew what Iran was doing in South America. He wrote a book about it, or it's included in his book, specifically in Venezuela. The Trump administration went ahead and they designated the oil minister of Venezuela, Tariq Assimi is his name, as a foreign drug dealer, a kingpin. He's been working on behalf of Hezbollah for decades. He's the one that's working together, the point man on these deals and relationships with the Iranians. And right now, if you go to Caracas, if you go to elsewhere in Venezuela, you'll see massive stores with Iranian products in them. If you go to the northern parts of the state, you'll see, or you might not see this, but right now Iran is working out of some of the islands off the coast there, maintaining reconnaissance on the Western Hemisphere, working together with the Venezuelans. And so over the past couple of years, you've seen shipments of gold bars come out of Venezuela and be sent back to Iran on Mayan Air jets, the Iranian carrier. You've seen shipments of oil, shipments of important machinery to help the refineries work properly in Venezuela as well. And you've seen Quds Force leaders, terrorists, trained terrorists from Iran make their way to Venezuela. Now, why is Iran into this? Now, there have been some reports that Tariq Assimi, the number two most powerful man in Venezuela, is actually working for the Iranians, and that the Iranians are propping up the Venezuelan government right now. They're helping them out. But they have nefarious plans for Venezuela. They would like to turn Venezuela into a proxy, just like they've turned Lebanon into a proxy, just like they've turned Syria into a proxy, just like they've turned Iraq into a proxy. They want to do that in the Western Hemisphere. And this is dangerous for the U.S. homeland. Now, I don't expect, you know, tomorrow some of these like Hezbollah-style rocket attacks on Florida, or missile attacks on Florida. But there are hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans right now heading up to the border and being let in the southern border of the United States. And Tariq Assimi, this man down in Venezuela, the number two in Venezuela, the oil minister, he's had a history of actually fabricating Venezuela or giving Venezuelan passports to Iraqis, to Lebanese, to Iranians. There's been several hundred. This is going back to a CNN story, but I think it was back in 2015, where working out of the Baghdad consulate there, what you had was several Venezuelan passports that were being given to Iranian agents, led by Tariq Assimi, who was the interior minister at the time in Venezuela. He was behind it. And so this isn't just a relationship of convenience where they're both getting something out of it. This is Iran infiltrating Venezuela, getting most likely Iranian agents with Venezuelan passports and sending them north. This is a very dangerous situation for the United States. And of course, when you understand that behind this spirit of all these decisions by the Biden administration is this idea that America is under attack by this government, you can see that this makes sense. You can see that there would be a strong relationship between Venezuela and the Iranians, and this does not bode well for the future safety of the American homeland. If you would have Iranian agents, just like surrounding Israel, now on in the United States doorstep and perhaps being infiltrating into the United States across the southern border as well. That's all we're going to cover for that, but we're going to take a short break and pick it up more in this prophecy and actually go into the latter chapters of the book of Zechariah to see how the Feast of Tabernacles actually does play into these new stories as well. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
A couple of days ago, I was exiting the hall here where we're celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, and actually there was another religious convention or event taking place. A lot of people were streaming into the hall. It was for some evangelist, and there was a number of people in the car park, and seeing a family that was dressed nicely coming out of the car park, they asked us, are we in the right place? Is this the right place to go and see this evangelist? And we said, yeah, I think it is. I mean, it looks like they've got some people over there that are directing traffic once you enter the building. And this really nice man, he said, so where, what are you doing? And it's like, oh, we're here for, I said, we're here for a religious convention. And he said, which one? And then he said, I said, the Feast of Tabernacles. Oh, and Feast of Tabernacles, what's that? And I mentioned the fact that we're with the Philadelphia Church of God, and he was a bit confused by it all, that all these terms, I guess, that he had never heard of. And then he just finished it with a praise the Lord and walked off. And what's interesting about this, and what is kind of what I've been thinking about over the last couple of days, is seeing this other event take place in the same hall, close to the celebration of the keeping of the Feast of Tabernacles here in South Dakota, is just how little many people are aware of these feast days, and instead choose to keep other days. And this is surprising, especially concerning the prophecies that we've been covering. In the first half of the program, we covered Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40 and talked about how the king of the south, radical Islam led by Iran, is going to push the world towards war, and this is going to start a chain reaction that is going to lead to the war finally that will end all wars. But if you go over to the book of Zechariah, you'll see that this war is mentioned, of course. And then the events directly following that are mentioned as well. And it relates to the Feast of Tabernacles. And this is very important. If you're listening to this program, you definitely most likely believe in the Bible. You most likely want to follow the Bible. You want to follow what it says. You want to live your life according to the Bible. And yet, here you have a man that is going to a religious convention of a very popular evangelist here in across the United States, happened to be in South Dakota, and he hasn't heard of the Feast of Tabernacles. Why not? Why should that be? Well, how is that the case? Notice here, this is Zechariah chapter 14. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, verse 1, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of you. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the woman ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. And this chapter from this point on, I mean, this is these verse 2 here in Mr. Flurry's booklet on Zechariah. And the day of the Lord, it goes into this, and you can definitely, again, request that at thetrumpet.com, that booklet. It goes into verse 2, and it shows how this is a series of events that are leading to the battle of the day of the Lord, when Jesus Christ is actually going to come. And you can see that verse 4, his feet shall stand in the day upon the Mount of Olives. So this is after man is busy fighting against man for 2.5 years, then Jesus Christ is going to return. And they're going to turn their weapons of warfare against him. Obviously, that's not going to work out that well for them, but in the long run it will, of course, because it's going to end the war. Verse 4, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, as it is. just across there from the Temple Mount on the east, from ancient Jerusalem. And the Mount of Olives, and shall cleave in the midst thereof towards the east. The Mount of Olives is going to split, obviously, in half. At that point, people are going to flee, and so on. And you'll notice, we'll continue reading here, verse 9, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Lord. And so this is the change, the great change that we're all looking forward to. Now, Christians today should be looking forward to this. This is the second coming of Christ. This is their Messiah. If they believe in the second coming of Christ, this is the event that they've been waiting for, the change that's going to take place that will revolutionize society night and day. From this point forward, everything's going to be different. Notice what the first thing is in this new world that's led by Jesus Christ. What is he doing with the people? What are they doing? How does he re-educate mankind? How does he start this education process? We'll go on and read this. Verse 16. You can continue on and read through this whole passage if you like. We'll just go to verse 16. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem. So when? When did they come against Jerusalem? So in this final battle, they're coming to Jerusalem. And the people that are left after this battle, what are they going to be doing? So this is directly in chronological order from this time. Everyone which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep what? The Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be, whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall there be no rain. And so God is serious about this. Everyone, once Jesus Christ returns, will be given the choice to keep the Feast of Tabernacles or not. It's going to be pretty well known if you forget about it, if you don't want to keep it, you can look. There's plagues that come. There's no rain that's going to come. It says, if Egypt decides not to do it, verse 19, this shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that come up not to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. It says there that there will be a plague, there will be no rain, and God's going to encourage people to keep these very feast days. Now, why don't you hear more about the Feast of Tabernacles? I mean, I live in Israel, so obviously I'm very familiar with the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot. The Jews obviously have their way of keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot as they call it. And you'll see at this time of the year, you'll see a lot of palm branches and people setting up little makeshift tents, I guess, or dwellings, I guess you could call them, on their balconies, or sukkah as they call it. And they'll be eating under that for 7 days. Now, of course, the command is even more than that. It's actually to dwell. And of course, that word in Hebrew does mean to sit, but you can see the context there. Back when in Leviticus chapter 23, when Israel was told to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, they were going to commemorate dwelling in booths, meaning these temporary dwellings, just like they did. They dwelt in tents when they came out of Egypt during the Exodus. This is what the Feast of Tabernacles is about. It's a memorial even of that coming out of Exodus, out of Egypt, on the way to the Promised Land. That's one part of it. But you'll see the Jews keep it to this day. And yet, why don't Christians keep it? Why don't Christians keep it? Why did this man that says, praise the Lord, why didn't he know about the Feast of Tabernacles? What's wrong with traditional Christianity? When it's going to be kept in the millennium, it's going to be kept by Jesus Christ, there's going to be plagues, no rain that comes on people that don't keep it. Why aren't they keeping it today? I mean, everyone claims that they're a follower of Christ and they're a follower of what he taught. Well, he kept it. The apostles kept it. There's no mention of them not keeping it. It's reaffirmed in the New Testament and the Old, and even a prophecy that surpasses the New Testament. Or at least a prophecy that will take place yet in the future. It's being kept. Now, all these holy days, if you're interested in understanding them and knowing about them, these are true Christian holy days. God's holy days. Christ kept them, and Christ is going to enforce their keeping in the future. Notice this, and this is Leviticus chapter 23. And I'm just going to read the first few verses here. The Lord spoke unto Moses, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them concerning the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. And these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. Don't hear much about many Christians keeping that. God's true church does keep the Sabbath. But notice verse 4. And these are the feasts of the Lord, the feasts of the eternal, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. These are the feasts of the eternal. And we know from other scriptures in the New Testament, obviously, that the Word, or the eternal here, before he was made flesh, it was the Word that we're talking about. Jesus Christ was the God of the Old Testament. And if you go to the book of John chapter 1 and verse 14, it talks about how the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. He is the Lord. And that Lord's feasts are here in Leviticus chapter 23. They're laid out to us, all these seven festivals here. And the Feast of Tabernacles is just a very joyous one, because it pictures this time directly following Jesus Christ's return, the putting away of Satan. That's in the New Testament. You can read that in Revelation chapter 20, that talks about that, the putting away of Satan, putting him up, locking him up, chaining him up, so he can't influence this world like he has, so he can't influence religion like he has, so he can't influence Christianity like he has, blinding the hearts and the minds of those that really do, and many of them are sincere, claim to follow Jesus. Well, these are Jesus Christ's feasts. The Feast of Tabernacles is one of them. And in the future, all of mankind is going to be keeping them. In the millennium, as we read in Zechariah chapter 14 there, everyone's going to be keeping them. They'll be blessed for keeping them. They are a blessing. They're a wonderful blessing. And the chance that we have every single year, I mean, I've been blessed to be understand this, not by any means of myself, at least being brought up in this way of life, keeping these feasts every single year, not keeping these other festivals that churchianity and modern Christianity has kind of brought into the fray, such as Christmas, Easter. You won't find them mentioned in the Bible, at least in the correct translations of the Bible in the New Testament, at least being condoned to be kept. You will find them actually in there, in their direct precursor, the development of these pagan days that morphed or that were amalgamated into Christianity in the 4th and 5th centuries AD, far after the Bible was written. What did the original apostles keep? What did they command to be kept? They obviously kept these days as well. Now, this is definitely not to condemn anyone that is not aware of this truth. Like that man that seemed very nice, he was cordial, he was happy, to be there for his event, but he didn't understand this wonderful feast, these wonderful feast days, feasts of the Lord, Feast of Tabernacles. These are days that are actually commanded by God. Once you understand that they're commanded by God, then we are need to be accountable for that knowledge that we have. Now, this is something that you can prove for yourself, and far more than this little program that we're doing today. It's just this portion of that. And to do that, you need to request Herbert W. Armstrong's very powerful book. It's called Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days. Which should you keep? Which should you keep as a Christian? Should you keep the feasts of the Lord, or should you keep days that were amalgamated into churchianity, Christianity, centuries after Jesus Christ died? That's a good question. It's something that you can prove from your Bible, and that book can definitely guide you through that study in your Bible. That's all we're going to cover today. Thanks again to Mr. Stephen Flurry for allowing me to take today's program. Not too sure who's going to be with you tomorrow, but I'm sure you'll have a full program of news and also probably something about the Feast of Tabernacles as well. Again, you can call our operators. I'm not sure of the number, but you can definitely go and visit thetrumpet.com and you can request the literature, Pagan Holidays or God's Holidays, which you can also request America Under Attack and Great Again, other books we referred to as well. And if you want to send some feedback on this program or others, you can write your emails to td at thetrumpet.com. Thanks very much for joining me today, and have a good day.